We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Paul and Jordana, happy Monday. Little spring in your step today between the weather and the rain and things opening up a little more as we inch towards normalcy. Remember normal? Remember January? Jor, how's
it
going?
It is a different vibe today. More people outside, more people walking around. It's weird seeing stores open. It's a new day, my friends. Welcome, welcome. Jordana and Paul here.
And I want to remind listeners that Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison is going to be joining us in just a few minutes in response to what's happening right now in Albany, Minnesota. Just before noon, Stearns County Judge William Cashman issued a temporary restraining order blocking the Shady's chain of six restaurants from opening today. All parties in the lawsuit have to appear in court May 22nd for a hearing brought on by Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison. According to Schiffler, the owner of these bars and restaurants, our attorneys have advised us not to open our doors, which created some boos and shouts from the crowd, Jordana, as you might expect, about 200 to 300 people gathered out front. Again, the owner, Mr. Schiffler, who we did, in fact, try to reach out to, he said, this has not been about money. This is about our freedom. This is a fight for small business. Cashman agreed that Keith Ellison's office showed that Shady's patrons, employees, and the general public will suffer irreparable harm unless the chain is temporarily stopped from providing on-site consumption at the six locations. And again, Cashman, just as a reminder, that is the judge. Stearns County Judge William Cashman is the one who issued this temporary restraining order preventing Shady's from opening up. What do you make of that?
But there are folks lined up. They're lined up outside. They are definitely not social distancing. They are elbow to elbow waiting outside the bar to be open. And Paul, I don't know if you recall, but months ago at this point, when the lockdown first started, the shelter-in-place order first started, we had Professor David Schultz on the show, who's a constitutional law expert from Hamline. And he said, you know, Jordana, I foresee in the future where there will be lawsuits because I don't, and he didn't even know. He goes, I don't know how constitutional it is for the state to tell private employers they have to not operate their businesses. He goes, we have separations for that. And I have a feeling the constitutionality of the stay in place order will be questioned. And I thought, oh, my gosh, that's crazy. You know, this is for everybody's safety. Don't be silly. We're all going to behave and we're going to take care of each other. And here we are. We are in that place right now. So that's it. It is a question of the constitutionality of whether or not they can the state can make a mandate to shut down business. Yet I'm hearing you're telling us the judge said it is a safety violation. And right now the shutdown stays in place.
Look, since this nation was born, 1776, there's always been this tension, Jor, between me and we, individual rights and freedoms versus the common good. So I sympathize with this owner. I do, as a business owner. But you have to err on the side of safety, right? Protecting as many Minnesotans from getting sick and possibly dying as possible. We will get it right from the source. Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison up next.
317, Jordana and Paul, thank you for spending some time with us today. We're now joined by Attorney General Keith Ellison. And Keith is in the middle of this controversy surrounding Shady's Bar in Albany, Minnesota, where the breaking news is it was supposed to open against state rules 3 hours ago. And about 15 minutes after it was supposed to open, the owner of the bar said, "We are not going to open." Governor Walz has backed Keith Ellison's efforts to sue the bar in violation of Minnesota's law. And now the bar owner, Chris Schiffler, says he's been advised by his lawyers not to open the bar. Attorney General Keith Ellison, so happy to have you on the show. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, glad to be with you. How are you today?
You know, we're okay. And this is such an interesting debate because at the very beginning of the lockdown, we did have a conversation about the constitutionality of the state being able to stop businesses from operating. And I imagine that this is what the basis of the lawsuit was, that the state can't tell businesses what to do. Can you kind of break down the legalities of that and why you thought you had proper grounds to sue the bar?
Well, Minnesota Chapter 12 is a chapter of our law which gives the right of the governor to declare a peacetime emergency. And in a peacetime emergency, the governor can issue executive orders to promote the health, safety, and welfare of the people of the state, given that we're in the middle of a peacetime emergency. These are things like disease, pandemics. These are things like, natural disasters, different kind of things like that. And so, you know, we do have the right. There's a Supreme Court case called Jacobson versus Massachusetts, which makes it very clear that that the government can take steps to protect people during a pandemic and can suspend the normal operation of life to make sure that people can survive. So, in all the time that we've had the U.S. Constitution or any state constitution, it has never been absolute all the time. I mean, you've never been able to shout fire in a crowded theater. Though shouting fire, you might say, "Oh, that's my First Amendment right to yell fire wherever I want to." No, freedom of expression does have limits in the Constitution, and that includes basic health and safety rules. And this is a situation like that. So Chapter 12 gives the governor the authorization to make the order, the executive order, and I am authorized as the Attorney General to enforce the order, which I have done and will continue to do so. But we would prefer to talk it out, to work it out. And overwhelmingly, I'd like you to know, people have complied. They've listened. They've worked with us. We've given them the information, and they have, done the right thing. But in this particular case, this particular gentleman drove it to the limit, and he forced us to go to court and get a temporary injunction, which is in place right now.
Attorney General, actions have consequences, and I struggle with this a little bit as a business owner, a small business owner in Minnesota, with employees and payroll and just trying to keep things going for their families as well as my own. But I understand the overarching need to keep people safe. I have a right to take actions that maybe endanger my health. I don't think I have a right to take actions that endanger other people's health. How do you balance civil liberties and freedoms, which are in America's DNA, with, the common good? In other words, finding that, threading that needle between me and we. What do you say to people who maybe confront you and have a problem with the state weighing in on this?
Well, what I say is that the state should tailor its health and safety regulations to protect people in the pandemic. They shouldn't be broader than they need to be. They should be careful. We should be in constant communication. We should adapt as we need to. But at the end of the day, urgency and necessity has always been a time when the normal course of life just doesn't go forward. Look, Lincoln suspended the writ of habeas corpus during the Civil War. So, I mean, this idea that you can always do whatever you want to do, whether it's peacetime or not, whether it's pandemic or not, that's just not American history. It's not the American Constitution. It's not American law. The law has always recognized that you got to be flexible in times of pandemic, in times of emergency, and that is what the governor's trying to do, and that's what I'm trying to do. And like you mentioned that You're a business person. I want to personally thank you for obeying the law. I mean, how is it fair to the 600,000 registered businesses with the Secretary of State to all of them do all they can to try to comply with the law, and yet a handful say, we're not going to. We're going to do whatever we want. I mean, that's not fair to all the people who do the right thing. And I think that it's important to point that out as well. Most businesses, most landlords, most folks are trying to get by in this very difficult situation, and I commend them for it. But we can't let people just violate the law, because that's anarchy.
And I thank you for saying that. And I think Paul brings up a really good point. I know that the lawyers for this business owner said that we prefer to work with the government. We prefer to work with them, not against them. Then, Keith, what is your message to business owners who feel like, you guys are killing me, I can't make a living, I can't feed my family, I got to keep my business open? What is your message to them? Because I imagine that government does want to work with them. You know, we've relaxed these restrictions, and so we've taken some steps. So what's a message for them today?
The message is, tell us what your needs are. Tell us how we can help you, given the pandemic. Share with us what your struggle is, and let us come together with a solution that allows you to be successful in your business and allows us to protect you and the public from the pandemic. That's why we have seen some businesses that have been able to open, because between the governor, the commissioner of public safety, and the commissioner of health, we've been able to figure out a way to do it in a way that doesn't jeopardize the public health. And so we're moving in that direction, and we're continuing to move in that direction. But we need to stay in communication, and we need to continue to talk. We've increased testing dramatically. We've made more PPE available, although it's still not an adequate supply just yet. But we are responding. We're doing our contact tracing. We're ramping that up. So we're responding, and as we do want to relax some of the restrictions in a way that is consistent with public health. You know, people can go outside. They can go to our parks. They can go fishing. They can do outdoors activities. We ask people to wash your hands, stay 6 feet away, wear a mask, and just try to understand that this is a real thing. You know, let me just say, 722 people have died as of last night, maybe more today. About 17,000 Minnesotans have been positive. Almost 90,000 Americans have died. And well over a million, and almost a million and a half Americans have been positive. This thing is real. It's very real. And people have lost loved ones, people very close. And I don't want that to happen to anybody else. So this is why we have to enforce this order. Because you might think, you might be asymptomatic. You might say, I'm fine, I'm feeling good. But how's your 82-year-old mom doing? Is her compromised immune system going to withstand the COVID that you might inadvertently transfer to her because you're cavalier and reckless? I mean, these are the kind of factors that we've got to take into consideration. This thing will get over, but let's do it together. Let's not do the Lone Ranger, I'm going to do what I want to do kind of thing. Let's do it together. Let's do it with law, and let's do it with a lot of communication. And I promise we're going to try to relax this stuff as soon as it's safe to do so.
Attorney General, last question. And by the way, my mother-in-law is recovering from COVID-19. She's 91. She's doing okay. She's tough. I know where my wife got her tough genes from. But it hits home. It hits home when it hits home. Somebody you know, somebody you love who catches this thing. What else are you working on? I would imagine this is taking some of your short-term time and energy and effort, but Corona scams, where do you spend the majority of your time and effort and resources right now, today?
Well, I can tell you, we've hit, right now, I'm trying to help people afford their lives and stay afloat during this pandemic. We've had over 2,000 price gouging complaints. We've had over 500 illegal eviction violations of the eviction moratorium complaints. We've had about 100 verifiable scams. We've had people saying that this fake treatment or that fake treatment is going to cure you or protect you from COVID-19. It's not. We have been very, very active. We've been protecting people because we passed an executive order that creditors cannot just take your stimulus money. And so we've had to protect people from that because the stimulus money is supposed to go to keeping families afloat. We've been, and plus all the other regular stuff. I mean, you know, we've been working on everything we always work on. There's the other scams that are not COVID related. We're busy doing that. We've got environmental related things that we've been doing. We've been just really super active, and folks are telling me that they're working 25% over regular time, 44% over regular time, and they're doing it mostly from home, which means they've got all the family distractions that anybody would have working remotely. So we're working overtime with the AG's office for the benefit of the people of our state, and we're proud to do it.
Attorney General Keith Ellison, thank you so much for joining us today, and be safe out there, sir.
You too. Have a good one now.
Thank you, sir. Keith. They are busy. They still have the business of being attorney general and the attorney general's office of the state, and plus all of these other things. It is disheartening to hear all of those, the scam artists, the snake oil, the scamming of the checks that people, that is so disheartening. I'll tell you right now, if you're running a scam during the era of COVID, you're going straight to hell, my friends, straight to hell.
A special place in hell. Yeah.
My goodness. Yep. When we return, we'll breathe. We will feel better about everything and a little bit of good news. That's up next on CCO. Time to relax a little bit. I hope your work day is almost done. Paul and Jordana here. We're going to do some deep breathing exercises like we do every 3:35 every day. Today, we're going to go over the difference between shallow breathing and deep breathing so you can identify when you're feeling your breath getting shallow and you can make it more deep. Okay? So, just sit in a comfortable place. You can lie down. You can get up from your desk if you want. Feet flat on the ground. Maybe your back is straight. I just want you to alternate between deep breaths and shallow breathing. A shallow breath sounds something like this. Like when you're anxious, you're nervous, can't catch your breath. That's a shallow breath. And obviously, deep breathing, you know how to do it, is with your lips open or closed. Now, if you alternate between the two shallow breaths, and then two deep breaths, you can feel how much calmer the deep breaths are. So when you feel your body beginning to do the shallow breaths, it's really important to take note of that because you have the opportunity to change it up right then. Then when you feel yourself having the shallow breaths, all you need to do is add in a word like calm or relax or let go when you do your deep breathing. You don't have to say it out loud. You can say it to yourself and it will calm you down. So this is just good for muscle memory, for you to remember the difference between shallow breathing and deep breathing. So practice. Do two shallow breaths, then do two deep breaths. So next time you end up with shallow breathing, kind of subconsciously, you'll be able to catch yourself and calm your breath down. There you go. You keep breathing. You keep doing this exercise. Paul and I will return to regularly scheduled programming.
Very nice. Thank you, Jor. Thank you, thank you. This has become a staple of our show. Every day,
good,
rain or shine.
It. We need
at
it.
At 3:34, we will help you mellow out a little bit. So I appreciate what you're doing here. Over the weekend, I don't know if Handsome Husband was watching any sports. There was kind of some sports over the weekend. There was NASCAR without any fans. There was golf without any spectators. And I watched Bundesliga soccer, German soccer. Again, nobody in the stands. And it was quiet. They didn't pipe in any crowd noise.
Weird?
There was no can noise. It was weird. I was grateful to
Sounds
see
weird.
Anything resembling live sports, but it was mm-hmm. still a bit surreal, which brings me to this story, which is neither good nor bad. It just is. A professional soccer club in South Korea has apologized after putting sex dolls in empty stands during a recent soccer match.
That's funny.
In a statement, FC Seoul, FC Seoul, expressed, quote, sincere remorse over the controversy. I guess this has produced a controversy in South Korea. The team insisted that it used mannequins, not sex dolls, to mimic a crowd at the Seoul World Cup Stadium. But apparently a few sex dolls were in the mix and in the stands cheering, silently cheering on those soccer players. Talk about bizarre. The other thing that caught my mind, caught my eye here, I made some cheesy egg sandwiches yesterday for
delicious
lunch, and it did make me feel better. Just the act of focusing on cooking and just ignoring everything else, something to be said for that. Research, Jor, and you may disagree, and you have the freedom to disagree with me, even if I'm right. Research shows that cooking does, in fact, make you happy. There's now scientific evidence. People feel happier after practicing everyday creative acts like cooking, according to a recent study in the Journal of Positive Psychology.
Really?
Which I know you are a big fan of.
Yep, it's on the nightstand.
Puts you to sleep. Michael Kosett, PhD, professor of the Chicago School of Professional Psychology, teaches a course on culinary therapy. Therapy using cooking, which is a real thing. His quote, "We're feeling a loss of control as our routines are thrown out the window. Cooking centers people, offering the emotional grounding of a task and a sense of accomplishment. Cooking demands just the right level of attention and offers just the right amount of reward. Cooking family dishes can be a way to work through emotions of being away from loved ones, even managing loss and grief on a large scale. All of us are dealing with collective loss right now, whether it's jobs, routines, not seeing the people we love. Cooking is a cathartic way to work through those emotions. Just ask all the people out there that are baking bread. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. You can't. Yeah. So I found that vaguely interesting.
Yeah. No, I think that's very interesting. Not vaguely. I think it's very interesting. And I'm glad you had that experience. I seem to have had the opposite experience because I always find cooking a chore to be done. And I wish I didn't, because cooking is supposed to be a loving experience. You know, you pour your heart and soul to it because your family is going to eat this and you're nourishing your family with your efforts. And I would so much rather just like call in a restaurant and DoorDash and be like, can you have this delivered so we could just all eat together? The act of cooking frustrates me. And like I was grating onions the other day for my meatballs and I hate everything about that. I was crying as I was grating the onions because they're onions, not because I was in a bad mood or anything. And it's just, it's messy and you got to clean up. And I thought to myself, why don't, something must be wrong with me because I don't enjoy this. And my kids like my meatballs. And everybody seems to. You know, they're edible. They're pretty good, I guess. And I am not that person who likes cooking. And I have not grown to like it as I have gotten older and have cooked more and more millions of meals for my family. And if I never cooked another meal, it would be too soon.
Is that, Jor, is that learned behavior? Was your mother,
I don't know,
a great cook? Did your mom like to cook?
She was a good cook, but she did not like it. No, no. Hmm. She never said that she liked it or enjoyed it. My grandmother did, but I just find it messy. And, you know, then you got to clean up. And I feel like our family meals, we're not talking about the food. We're not like, I don't need kudos for the food. We're talking about other things, or, you know, we're sitting down for a family meal, which, and I think it's the act of sitting down for a family meal that's the important part. And I'm just like, oh, why am I wasting my time grating these damn onions, crying over here, you know, when I could be reading something about the show or, you know, doing something else.
Jor, it's an act of love, right? It's a quiet, subliminal way to tell your kids and your husband that you love them.
I know. I got to get better at appreciating the onion grating.
He could do the onion grating. He should be
doing
the crying.
Well, he's on cleanup, and he does clean up, and okay. He does it well, and you know that's how it goes. So
it
even I'll try and get better at it.
I'm going to send you this study in the Journal of Positive Psychology. It may change the way you look at the world, Jor.
Good. I need some more psychology, not just that. That's for sure. Sloan Martin will be joining us next. She is going to talk about the governor's press conference today. What is the latest on coronavirus in Minnesota? Next.
Paul and Jordana, DJ producing today and every weekday at this time. Sloan Martin is in to break down what she heard, the things that made her do a double take or a triple take at the governor's press conference. I saw something today in your notes, Sloan, that made me do a triple take. Gatherings of 10 people or fewer are allowed, but still should be avoided. Wear masks, even outside. Now, I thought the whole outside thing was optional. What am I missing here?
This is just recommendations. It is saying, you know, from health experts, this is what we can best say based on the evidence that we have of this virus that is, you know, brand new and that we continue to learn about each and every single day. This is our best guidance for what we should do to try and keep that face-to-face contact as minimal as possible. Because you think about if you're bringing people from outside your immediate home in for the first time, even with that social distancing, you're still, you know, within that same vicinity. In that immediate area. And wearing a mask, according to MDH, is more of protection from the wearer to other people around you than for the wearer themselves. So if I'm an asymptomatic carrier, me wearing a mask is saying, I know that I could potentially transmit something to you. There's a chance of that occurring. So I'm just going to take this and put it on my face and not increase that risk of it being transmitted to someone else. So no one's saying you have to when you're outside running or even that you have to in your own backyard. But they're also saying, according to MDH, that these are behaviors that we really should become more and more comfortable with because we're going to be living with them for quite some time.
That's interesting. That's a change for me, too. I when I walk around the lake, I have not been wearing a mask outside. You know, I've tried to avoid people on the path. I go walk in the grass or cross the street. But if that's what they're saying, that is what I will do. Thank you for the advice, Sloan Martin.
And I want to clarify, this is not... Jordana, just really quickly, it's just also, I mean, when you're around other people, like if it's a crowded path, for example, or something like that, no one's saying if you're alone by yourself in a trail, then you need to be wearing a mask. But it's also just that recognition of being in the general vicinity of other people and maybe not being able to perfectly physical distance. So again, no requirement here, just a recommendation to be able to get into the habit a little bit more when you go outside of the house.
Totally get it. And I appreciate that clarification. Over the weekend, I signed up for the Conserva course from Johns Hopkins to get trained in contact tracing. I'm fascinated by this. And Johns Hopkins, with the help of, it was the Michael Bloomberg Foundation, I think they offered, I don't know, $10 million, $20 million or something to create this free online course for people to be contact tracers. Because even though this position, this job existed before, it didn't exist in the way that we are now going to see. And I know contact tracing is something that was talked about at the press conference today. So tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, I'm interested to hear about your experience whenever you
I haven't taken the course yet
because it does seem interesting. Okay. Yeah. Well, we'll
I just signed up
check back in about that, but
absolutely.
Okay, yeah, but you know what they talked about today specifically about contact tracing is that they're continuing to build up the staff and training people. They were 400 as of last Friday. Another 100 are being trained and will be good to go this week. Their goal is to get 1,400, and if you think about how that that curve keeps kind of going up, we have an increase of cases each and every single day, an increase of 705 yesterday, up to 16,400 as of right now. So that's going to be a lot on these contact tracers' plates. And another thing they said, and I thought this was a really good reminder from MDH, is that if you are feeling symptomatic, if you've gotten your test, start to think about already where you've been, even in the last 2 weeks, who you may have been around, who you could have potentially spread this to before you even had those symptoms. So starting that process a little bit earlier, because these contact tracers are not going to have any breaks in between these cases. They are jumping from one to the next.
a new career. Sloan Martin, thank you for the time and thank you for the information today.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Sloan.
That's a whole new career, Paul. That's a, you know, contact tracer. I know a lot of people are out of work. They might want to think about taking the free course.
But is it sustainable? What happens when this thing ends, when there's a vaccine? And hopefully, God willing, this fades into the background. I wonder if the contact tracers, the people that are trained on that, can go on and parlay that into another similar job.
Or go back to their old job.
Well, yeah, that too. Good point. All right. Why didn't I think of that? Hey, what happens when physical distancing gets in the way of your sex life? Sexpert Lori Watson is up next.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.